I was going up the stairs and I was trying to like calm down, and I was like looking back and I could like see people's faces as I was going up the stairs, and people were like, I just remember this one woman, she like looked like she had seen the devil. Welcome to another episode of the Asian Not Asian Podcast, a podcast with all of your favorite Asian friends. Hello, Asian friends. It is your host, Mike Nguyen. Jenny is upstate. She's in, I don't know where she is. What do you do upstate? It's too early for apple picking. It's too late to save the world. So she's probably just drinking wine and journaling. Oh my God, that's exactly what Jenny is doing. Jenny is definitely drinking wine and journaling upstate and sitting on one of those Adirondack chairs. Just picture a Cialis commercial. That is what Jenny is doing. She is off this week, but she'll be back next week, and she misses you. She told me so. It's just us chickens today. Real quick, before we get started, just a couple of quick announcements. I've got a Hack City. The next one is September 8th. Thank you so much for everybody who came out last week, by the way. We got the next one September 8th. There's a special guest. Okay, I can't really say who. It's pretty cool. I'm going to say it. Let's just say if you're a fan of the show, you're going to want to come out to that one. It's at Union Hall in Brooklyn, Friday, September 8th. And tickets are available at AsianNotAsianPod.com or in the episode description of this very episode. Come check us out. I don't know if you've been listening. There's a terrible disaster happening in Maui. Actually, right where I was, if you were listening to the show earlier, you know, the summer, I was there. I was in that town. And like I had ice cream there and I walked around and ate a burger and had delicious drinks and everybody was so nice. And that town is devastated. And so there's some links in the episode description. If you want to contribute some funds for that, we're definitely going to be doing that. And then, so please, if you can, and definitely any shout outs to any of our listeners out in Hawaii. Finally, our editor, Pat Lee, the editor of this podcast, is making a film. And he's got a fundraiser going on, and he needs a bunch of money. He needs $25,000. I have no idea what you use $25,000 to make a short film. What is that for? Like, how many iPhones do you need? Like, two? That's like $800, maybe $900. So the rest of it, I'm assuming he's using for drugs. So if you want to contribute to that, he literally makes this podcast happen. He's the editor. We got a link going on also in the episode description, or go to our Instagram, Instagram.com/AsianNotAsianPod, and there's going to be some links for that too. That's it for now. There's milk and cookies after the sermon. I don't know why I said that. That's always something I always listen to after going to Mass. And this is kind of like Mass. This episode comes out on Sunday. We all get together, and we just talk about the shit that's bothering us. What else is that other than church? If you want to support the podcast, the best way to do that is by going to patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod. It's the best way to support the podcast. We love every single person who contributes to the show, and we use the money directly to support all the operations of this podcast. And we give you a little shout out. We give you a little backstory if you contribute to the podcast. Today we only got one. This is a weird one. I had to check the spelling a bunch of times. Okay, Renwald Kyle. I don't know if maybe the first name is Kyle and it's Kyle Renwald. That's also still confusing to me. But Renwald Kyle is the name. And I can only say this is an Asian person from Skyrim. It's the video game Skyrim, or The Witcher. This is an Asian with like one of those like two-handed claymore swords. This is Renwald Kyle. And he reached deep down into the leather pouch that he uses to carry all his gold around in and contributed to Patreon, which is really nice of him because the exchange rate from Skyrim money to actual US reality money, pretty bad. So we really appreciate that, Renwald Kyle. You're from... he's a claymore Skyrim Asian, but really, he's from New Jersey. Still from New Jersey, so he's probably a Korean guy. So shouts again, if you want to contribute to the podcast, that's patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod. And don't think that it's just me doing the podcast alone. I will do that one day because I have an immense ego, and I will be unchecked in my thirst to hear my own voice. But today we don't have that. We have a guest. It's going to be great. Also, real quick, we're recording in the booth, so shout out to Canal Street Market. But if you hear some trap music playing, it wasn't me. It's what's happening. Our guest today, he's an assistant professor of education at New York University. His research, I'm going to read this. This is from his bio. His research and teaching critically examine the benefits and consequences of radicalized public policy instruments in expanding and or constraining educational systems with a specific focus. I've already stopped paying attention, by the way, on how these dynamics shape access, learning, opportunity, and success within and beyond schools for students of color. That is gnarly. I have never had introduced a guest on this show that had the word critically examine. We almost never do that on this show. And this guy's going to do it. He's also one of my longest and best friends. Give it up. This is also his name. Give it up for Mike Hua Nguyen.
Hey, Mike. Good to join you here. Can I say it's actually racialized, not radicalized?
Oh, it is? Oh, my God. Racialized.
Racialized public policy instruments.
Wow. Did you write this?
Yeah.
You wrote this whole thing?
Yeah, we all write our own bios.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, it's based off what we study. Yeah.
Because usually when I read a bio, it's like, this guy was on Colbert, and then before that, he was a clown at Medieval Times. Okay, so that's usually how the bios I read are.
Sure,
comedy bio is like, I Yelp about, I talk about Asian stuff like Yelp and gold, and that is literally in my bio if I submit to a job. But yours has racialized public policy instruments in expanding and or constrained educational systems.
If you read any of my research, those words are and why would you, right? But why would anybody? But if you do, a lot of those words show up in the type of research that I do.
I am really excited to have you on. First of all,
I'm excited to be here.
Should I call you Dr. Nguyen?
Nobody calls me that. My students call me Mike. I tell them to call me Mike.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't use the doctor?
No, no.
You went to school professor. For the thing.
It's nice. It's nice. Parents are happy, you know, but no. You know, we went to school together, right?
Yeah.
And our professors there, all very casual.
They are.
It wasn't formal, and you know, I'm not trying to... I'm trying to maintain that. Now, don't get me wrong. There are instances where I do use it, where my colleagues use it.
That's badass.
But that, you know, and part of that is because, like for instance, I have colleagues who really insist on it, and some people go, "What's you know, that's weird," and I go, "No, I don't think so," because sometimes they are minoritized people, women of color, perhaps,
yes.
And so people treat them differently, and
right.
And they you know, and so it's important to let folks know how they're educated, how they're trained, their expertise, right? And so, in the classroom, I'm pretty informal. I recognize that I've got some inherent privileges, and so I don't have to always use that. But there are places where informal settings, we will use it. But
I mean, I think I think that makes sense that you don't use it. You know, with your students, you want to build rapport with them and kind of show those values. I think I'm going to start calling you Dr. Nguyen. That's tight. Like in here, I'll just be, hey, Dr. Nguyen, blah, blah, blah.
You know, I mean, you had other professors on here with PhDs. Did you call them doctor too?
I didn't. And now I regret not doing that. But I think for you, it'd be so cool to... Okay, first of all, we've known each other. We actually knew each other in college.
That's right.
Went to the same undergrad together. And then we were one of three Mike Nguyens. There's me, Mike Nguyen.
Yeah.
And I was called Dancer Mike because
I
would dance.
That's right.
And then
a very good dancer. Too.
Thank you. And then there's you, Mike Nguyen, who different people call you different things.
Yeah.
I called you Camera Mike
because
one time you wore a camera.
One time. I had a camera, my dad's camera. One time I was like, hey, everybody, I can print photos in a dark room. And then I got that.
You got that. But the other people call you something else. Do other people, Mike Hua, maybe?
Yeah, they called me that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we have another third Mike Nguyen who maybe one day I'll get him on here.
Yeah.
And he has different names. I have him on my phone as Mike Noogie. like giving a noogie.
That's right. That's right. Some people used to call him Thespian Mike.
Oh yes, Thespian.
Thespian Mike.
He was the one. He was in like the Theodore Rice.
He was in Theodore Rice.
The Asian American comedy troupe.
I almost wore my Theodore Rice shirt today.
You should have worn it.
I almost wore it. But I was never in Theodore Rice. It was given to me by a member of Theodore Rice, which I guess doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that it doesn't exist anymore, which is a bummer.
Total bummer.
That's a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
I mean, if you cannot have you can't support a Asian American art like theater thing at Berkeley of all places, where can we go?
Well, so part of the argument, I don't know if this is right or wrong.
Oh, okay.
I could be completely wrong here, but I think part of the argument, at least what I heard from some friends, some of our friends, is there's progress being made, which is that Theodore Rice was created, right, because there was no space for Asian Americans to do comedy, to do improv, to do all those things. And then as we sort of been able to join other groups, be a part of the broader theater scene on campus, I think people found that they could join so many other things, and so they didn't necessarily need Theodore Rice. So, you know, some people call that progress, some people call that integration. You know, my sort of position, I think, is if I could have my way, I'd have both.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be integrated in all the other things, but we still have Theodore Rice because it's so special for us and for our communities.
Yeah. Right? I blame Crazy Rich Asians for this, okay? There's too much progress happening. This is all...
Slow it down.
Harry Golding's fault with his amazing eyebrows. And now all of a sudden we don't have a Theodore Rice anymore. Well, I'm going to call you Dr. Nguyen. I think that's just fun. It's fun to do.
Nobody calls me that, but sure.
You also, I was like trying to Google you very quickly just to like when I was writing your little intro there. And typing in Dr. Michael Nguyen, it's a horrible rabbit hole.
There's
so many.
Too many.
And I kept adding on more things. I was like, Dr. Michael Nguyen, New York. Dr. Michael Nguyen, like, whatever. Professor. And it was, and I was still like, it would be like some random dude in Wisconsin or somebody who, like, I don't know, grew up in New York, but now is like a orthopedist. And I was like, where the fuck is my boy?
I think that's why I put my Vietnamese name in there also.
Yes.
So that way, like, you know, a lot of what we have to do as professors is write and publish things.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And so if I just did Mike Nguyen, then I get lost, right? But by putting in the Vietnamese first name also, sort of then if you Google that, then it pops up right away.
You know what it's like? It's kind of like how there's Michael B. Jordan.
That's exactly
it. You know, you're like, oh, it can't be Michael B. Jordan. And now that's a very different person.
That's right.
So
that's
you're the Michael B. Jordan of Michael H. Nguyen.
Without the abs, though.
Without the abs. Without that little, like, you know, muscle thing. Well, thanks for joining us. I wanted you to have on the show because I've known you for a long time. And somehow... you are a professor, and I'm not saying somehow because I didn't think you could. I thought you could, but it was just more like you found yourself being a professor. And usually you listen to the show, and I like to think that people, maybe they don't get dumber, but they definitely don't learn anything. And so you and I had a couple drinks, and you really said some interesting things related to some stuff we've talked about on the show. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna contribute to society for once, and I want people to learn a little bit because I learned a little bit when I was talking to you, and I thought that was cool. So, but first we're gonna fuck around, if that's all right.
That's great. Yeah.
First thing we like to do is a fit check. Do you do fit checks in your classroom?
I don't. We don't.
Do you teach undergrads?
I only teach graduate students actually.
Oh, okay.
So I only teach usually students working on their master's or their doctoral degrees.
Oh shit.
I hope eventually I get to teach some undergrads.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to figure out how to make that work. So I'm in a graduate school. So I'm trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Got it.
I would love to teach a class on like Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders and education. You know?
Well, I would love to have more fit checks in the classroom. And I think graduate school fit checks are going to be ass. Okay. And so undergrad fit checks, I think, will be pretty fire, especially at NYU. Huh? So this FYI. Okay. We're going to do a fit check. So I can go first. I'm wearing, of course, my Polo Ralph. Coffee hat, best thing ever. I have on my Cal. What's the name of this company again? It's Spooner.
Ryan Spooner.
Rain Spooner.
Rain. Yeah.
You know they make all these like ridiculous college shirts that have all this like kitschy design on it. So I have the Berkeley one, I have two of them, but this is the white one, and I'm wearing it, and it is fucking amazing. And I have my dad shorts on, and then it's been raining, so I have on my Salomon Gore-Tex shoes. All right. So I'm like really straddling the line between, am I about to do comedy or am I about to mow the lawn? You don't know. And that's exactly the vibe I'm going for. So that's what's up.
You were always such a well-dressed guy. And you know, as long as I've known you, in like, what, 18, 19 years old is when we became friends. And
something like that.
You know, since then you were always on the cutting edge of your fit, you know?
Yeah.
I remember like everyone was wearing blazers with jeans.
Yes.
You were doing that like 3 years ahead of all of us.
Yeah. People were like, what are you doing? What the fuck? Why aren't you wearing just a Cal hoodie as usual?
Yeah.
And New Balances. Well, it's because I was insecure. So how about you? We're going to go with you. Dr. Nguyen, what's your fit check, doctor?
You know, I don't dress nearly as cool as you. The shirt you're wearing, the brand, they do a bunch of other thematic shirts.
Yeah, they do
shirts.
Tons of
shirts. They were going to do an Indiana Jones one.
No shit.
And they do have one.
Oh,
and
they do?
And I almost bought it because I love Indiana Jones.
I didn't know that.
He's the first professor I ever met. He's the reason why.
Can you imagine if it was Indiana Jones, but he's Asian American Studies / Education professor?
That's like who I want to be like when I grow up.
Does he still have the whip?
I hope so. Yeah.
When is he using it? Like in a seminar?
Yeah.
Like, let's fight colonialism.
That's exactly it.
It's badass.
You know, it's funny. In the most recent movie, I don't know if
I haven't seen it, but I don't care. Just go ahead.
He's here in New York, and he's a professor at Hunter College. Ends up being a professor at Hunter College, which is just up the street from us, right? But Hunter College is known as that's a term they use, as an Asian American, Native American, Pacific Islander serving institution.
No shit.
It is an Asian it's an AAPI serving institution. It's like, that's like the equivalent, it's a federal designation, and it's the equivalent of like an HBCU.
Whoa.
But for AAPIs, and so Hunter College is one of those. So Indiana Jones is a professor at it's an Anapezi, that's how we pronounce the acronym.
Oh.
Indiana Jones is a professor at an Anapezi institution.
Yeah, who knew that Indiana Jones was Asian as shit?
Super Asian.
The guy's so Asian. Nice. Whenever I see him, yeah, that's why he's friends with Short Round or whatever.
Well, that's it.
That's it. They're homies.
It would be cool if they made a movie where Short Round takes over.
Well, that's what I thought was going to happen. I thought that they were going to have Kihi Kwan.
Yeah.
How fucking badass would that be?
He
would slide directly into that role perfectly.
Makes all the sense in the world.
Perfect sense.
We should start a petition to make it happen right now.
No. You know why? Hollywood hates good ideas. Okay? okay, so what are you wearing, doctor?
Okay, I'm just wearing I don't know what this is. It's just a short sleeve button up shirt, but the person who made it is Vietnamese. Who designed it and made it is Vietnamese American, I think from San Jose.
Oh, shit.
I can't remember her name.
Hold on, I can look.
Yeah. Can you take a look?
Called V Contour.
Yeah, nice. I bought it years ago at some little pop-ups thing.
That's cute.
In San Jose.
Nice.
And she's Vietnamese, so I guess her name is V.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then you got the short shorts on.
Yeah. When you have legs this good, you gotta wear.
You have great legs.
Short shorts. Thanks. Yeah.
We have very good legs together.
They're just genetic. You know,
we have genetically good legs.
I don't do much for them, but yeah, the genetic.
You think it's a Vietnamese thing?
I hope so.
I think it's a Vietnamese thing you're just like, I don't know. I'm trying to think all the Vietnamese dudes I know. I don't know why we would have this from farming. I have no idea.
My dad's got great legs.
There you go.
Maybe it's because we're being in the army, you know?
I guess so.
Yeah.
My dad was also in the army. All right.
See, there you
go. Yeah. Who knows? Mike, just real quick. You already kind of got a little going, but we like to give our guests a minute to get into just a minute to describe how you would describe yourself, okay? And you got to use the whole minute. That's the only trick.
Yikes.
Which I think you can do.
Okay.
You know, just throw in a lot of, what is the word you use here? Racialized public policy instruments. Just say that. That's like that's 4 seconds right there. Okay, ready? Go.
Well, hi everyone. It's Mike Hoang Nguyen here. I'm a professor at New York University. I study, for a lot of professors, our identities are very intertwined with our professional lives because we're so lucky that we got to pick our jobs. And so I love my job, and it's such a part of who I am, and the type of work I get to do, the classes I teach, the research that I conduct is about our communities, about our AAPI communities, and with the broader goal, right, of doing research that can uplift our community and come up with real public policy solutions that can be used and implemented by policymakers. In another life, before I went to graduate school, I worked as a congressional staffer. Mm. And so so much of my research is often thinking about federal policy, mm-hmm. and how do we study and investigate things that we can then use to uplift and serve our AAPI communities. Is that a minute?
That is right in a minute right now. Okay. Wow. That was pretty good.
I did not expect that, so hopefully that was okay.
No, I that's the whole thing. I always spring it on people. And most of the time, people like take 20 seconds to talk about themselves, and then they spiral into self-doubt.
Oh,
for
sure.
40 seconds.
Oh, no, now that we're done, I was like, I should have talked about how me and both you are children of refugees. Right?
Yeah.
So that's another important dimension of the work, is to think about how diverse and complex our communities are, and where some of us are refugees, or children of refugees, or grandchildren of refugees now, and what those implications are.
So, okay,
also a big part of the work that I do.
I definitely want to talk about it. Yeah. Well, we're going to first start off with how we usually start off the podcast, or I don't know, it's actually like 20 minutes into the podcast now, but which is, what kind of Asian were you this week? Mike, do you want to go first, or you want me to go first?
I want you to go first.
Okay, you have to ask me.
Oh, so. Okay. Mike,
yeah.
What kind of Asian were you?
I was a terrified... active shooter situation Asian.
Oh, goodness.
It was intense. And actually, this reminded me of something you and I talked about earlier, about how New York City is very sort of compartmentalized as far as like the craziness that happens to you, and like how everything is like so squished together. And I brought up the whole thing about the subway. The subway is like the great equalizer, because you can be like pressed up against like a billionaire and an unhoused person and... just a working class dude and, someone seeking asylum all at once, right? And so I was on the F train, and I pulled into Delancey Essex, which is right over here. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and it's rush hour, okay? So I'm like, hey, I'm headed home. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just kind of like daydreaming. And this, a couple people run out of the car, out of my car. And I was like, oh, what's going on? I thought maybe, people realize, oh, shit, it's my stop, and they have to run out. But then I saw more people from my car run out. And I was like, oh, well, maybe they're running to catch a train, which would normally be true. But where we are if you've been on into Delancey Essex off the F train, there's not another train nearby where you would like see it and run to it. So I was just like, oh, there's just people running off this train. And I was like, maybe there's rats. You know, sometimes there's a rat. Although, honestly, I've seen a rat before in the car, and people like they kind of freak out, but they just kind of like lift up their feet and they just like just scream a little bit. It's no big deal.
It's mainly the tourists, right?
It's kind of fun, honestly. It's a Instagrammable moment. But then I saw that people down the cars, like on the other cars, were running too, and I was like, what the fuck is happening here? And I was like, this is crazy. I kind of like stick my head out. And I think so much of your life, you think you're in control as far as, I am going to actively do this. I'm going to explicitly pick up this coffee and put it to my mouth and drink it. I'm going to think about getting up and walking to the bathroom. But as soon as I stepped out onto the platform with all the other people running, sure, I was like trying to figure out what was going on, but like the energy of the crowd made me run. Do you know what I'm saying? And I didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden, we're all running down and out. And
that's so scary.
I was trying to ask someone, like, what was going on. And they were like, there's something going on, like, behind us, blah, blah, blah. Somebody was like, just go, just run. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, I got to get out of here. And it was just like this crazy, like, animalistic thing where my body was like I you know, like Jesus take the wheel, you know, like my body's gonna do it. It's not even like you don't have to think about it. And I felt like this pressure on my chest as far as I was panicking, you know. I could tell I was panicking, and I was going up the stairs, and I was trying to like calm down, and I was like looking back, and I could like see people's faces as I was going up the stairs, and people were like, I just remember this one woman, she like looked like she had seen the devil. I was like, she was like terrified looking, and I was like, we're gonna go. I don't know what's happening here. I don't know what's going on. We get up, basically out of the station, like not all the way to the surface. I kind of stop at where the turnstiles are. There's some NYPD guys that they running the other direction down into the platform, and I was waiting there for a while. I don't hear anything. I don't hear any shots or anything like that. But it was really intense. And I just remember, just like, I couldn't feel my hands. That was like one of the things. I couldn't feel my hands. And I was like just trying to calm down. And after a while, it seemed, this is so New York too. After a while, a couple of us who were still like standing on the platform near the turnstile were like, I guess we'll go back down. We should check it out. You know, we still have to get home, you know, active shooter or not. I go back down there. I stick my head down there. The train is still there. The train is still there. And there's some people like getting on the train. And we, you know, me and a couple of other people who were kind of like all together, we all get on the train and we just sit back down. And I guess it was nothing. I check on Twitter later that all it was like, you know, someone was causing a disturbance. I don't know exactly what that means. And I'm surprised because, again, in New York, people are so used to like weirdness happening that you don't run, which is really the thing that kind of gave me pause. I was like, people don't run in this city. We're just like, it's fine. And the fact that they were running, I think that was really what triggered it. Took me like easily 20 minutes to like get my heart rate back to like where it was. And it was just like crazy, man. I thought it was like very surreal. You know what it felt like? I don't know if you ever had a nightmare where the world is ending or like a zombie apocalypse is happening, where it was like, oh shit, this is real. This is happening. It felt like that. I was like, oh shit, it's my turn to go through the active shooter thing. You know, it was like American rite of passage now. I'm like, oh, I got to go through the active shooter thing. And I didn't think I would, even if it was, I mean, in retrospect, it wasn't real. But at the time, I thought it was real. I didn't feel like I was in danger. My life was in danger. But I definitely felt like, you know, this is horrible. This is a horrible situation. I don't like this at all. I, you know, need to call my wife immediately. You know, that was the main thing I was thinking about. But yeah, that was me. I'm not very funny, but no, very American. Let me tell you
very
that.
Very scary.
Yeah.
Oh, too American.
Yeah. It was real, real gangster, man.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. That's so scary.
Yeah, dude.
I'm glad that there wasn't an active shooter.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think, is okay.
It seemed okay. Okay. It seemed okay. I don't know. I mean, later on, like, I mean, as we were like pulling out of the station, I just saw the cops just like milling about. So I was like, all right, it seems it's fine. I didn't even see them. I didn't see anything unusual happen except for everybody panicking. I didn't see any like person doing anything. So
what's scary is like sometimes if that happens, like people might fall and
run
over each other. I mean, like that, you know?
Yeah. That's the main thing.
Yeah, that's really scary. So I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad everybody's okay.
Yeah, it was real gnarly. You know, can I say too? And people who listen to the show will get ready to roll your eyes. I think my jiu-jitsu really helped me. Okay, because honestly, it felt like I was competing, and there's a thing when you compete, it's called an adrenaline dump, felt just like that. It was just like that, where it's like I couldn't feel my hands.
Oh,
I didn't have any minor motor skills. I remember people were videotaping, like, you know, on their cameras.
Yeah.
And which also added to the surrealness.
Yeah, which is like your instinct is instead of to escape,
yeah,
is to whip out your phone and start recording.
Well, I was like, maybe I should record too in order to, I don't know, just like, you know, get more evidence. I have no idea. I remember thinking I could not figure out how to use my phone. I was holding my phone.
Yeah.
And I was looking down at it and I was like, how does this work? I couldn't do it. I didn't have any, I only had my gross motor skills. I had run north, east, southwest and maybe jump and duck under a boulder.
Yeah.
That was it. I didn't have any access to any of my like fine motor skills. It was like so weird.
Wow. Well,
yeah, man.
Yeah. That's so scary, man. I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad it wasn't actually an active shooter incident. Man, that's scary.
Yeah.
I don't know how to respond to that. That's
yeah.
So scary.
No, you know.
But I'm glad you're okay.
I'm okay. I've lived here, you know, 14, 15 years. And, you know, again, it just reminded me of kind of like, because you've just moved here maybe like a year or so ago.
About a year ago. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Have you had any like real gnarly subway situations?
No, none.
Okay. That's
none.
Good.
None.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been a, felt like every other single time that I visited as a tourist before I moved here. Yeah. No. Real issues or incidents.
Wow.
I know. Feel really lucky.
That's scarier than what I went through, you know? I can't believe it. The city. I don't know the city anymore, man. Mike, what kind of Asian were you this week? Dr. Nguyen, what kind of Asian were you this
week? Well, what I'm going to say is way more lighthearted.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. I was a Star Wars Asian.
I did. Okay.
This week.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But to be fair, I think like every week I'm a Star Wars Asian.
Yes. Yes.
So if you go into like my office, I've got like Star Wars posters. I've got Star Wars toys. There's a picture of me and Darth Vader like hung up in a frame. Like, you know, people like in
you and Darth Vader.
Yeah. Me and Darth Vader.
Where did you get this?
Well, at Disneyland, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you know, like people like in like you go into their office and they have like, a picture of like them and like President Obama, you know, and like, you know, and like I have a picture of me and Darth Vader framed up, like you know.
Wait, have you ever met Obama?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Did you take a picture with him?
Yes. And I took my dad too. So it was he was visiting California, and so I got an invite, took my dad, and we went to the airport and saw Air Force One land.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It's like the coolest thing ever. Air Force One lands. Comes around, he comes down the stairs, walks up, shakes everybody's hand, shook my dad's hand. That's what I really care about. Met him very briefly, like seconds, right? But really cool experience for my dad. Whoa. So cool where 2 weeks later, then Vice President Joe Biden was visiting.
Yep.
And I asked my dad, Dad, do you want to go meet Vice President Joe Biden? And he said, no, it's okay. I already met the president.
Listen, I may have beautiful, ageless Asian skin, but when you get to be my age, you do worry about some things. You worry about things like thinning hair. And if you're worried about thinning hair, I want to tell you there's help. There's Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, clinically shown to improve hair growth, visible thickness, and visible scalp coverage for men and for women. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements use physician-formulated, natural, medical-grade ingredients. Their drug-free, patented technology provides consistent, reliable results. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Asian. Find out why over 3,500 healthcare professionals recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Asian. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Asian. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we're faced with tough choices, and the path forward isn't always clear. Like, should I move for that new job, or break up with my partner, or even, who am I as a person? Whether you're dealing with decisions around career, relationships, or anything else, therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate life, so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. Trusting yourself to make decisions that align with your values is like anything else. The more you practice it, the easier it gets. I've done therapy in the past, and I use what I've learned to this day to help me figure out what I'm going through and what I care about. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Asian today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/Asian. I got the good one.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Wait, so do you have a picture with Obama?
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did he, you know that famous Keen Peele sketch where he's like, hello, hello,
yeah,
hello. And then whenever he meets a black person, he's like, oh, what's up? What's going on?
You know,
he daps you up. Did he dap you up? Or
no,
just
it was
that?
Like, it was like barely a second. It was on the rope line. It was like barely a second. But the photo that, that we have actually is like from, I didn't buy it. I went to like the AP, I forget which, like Reuters or AP or one of those, like some professional news photographer took a picture of me and my dad shaking his hand, and you know, you can like buy it, but it's like $1,000.
Oh shit!
Photo, you know,
so yeah.
So like I downloaded it from like the website, but it's got like a big like watermark on it. It says like owned by Reuters.
No, you can get that out now, dude. You know, Photoshop AI is really good.
I don't have that skill set.
So. Is your dad like not a right-wing person?
My parents are pretty progressive.
Really?
Yeah. They're progressive Vietnamese parents, which you know,
they weren't at the riots.
They were not. They were.
I feel so many of people we know were there. like in her community. I mean, I was waiting for the photo. I was like, oh my God, there's Tuan. Oh my God.
There's that big, unfortunately, there's that like that picture in front of the Capitol with like a guy in a giant South Vietnamese flag.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yes, but you know the Vietnamese food was probably pretty banger that day.
Oh, yikes. and that's from like during all of the elections where you grew up in Orange County, there were like all of these Vietnamese Americans coming out doing all this wild protesting.
Yes.
I was blown away. I was super blown away by all that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not as an academic.
Right.
I was not.
Right.
We know why, you know, we sociologists have explained why that happens, but still, I think when it's your community and you're on the other side.
Yes.
You're sort of, it's still shocking.
Yeah, it is very strange.
Yeah.
Hold on here. What kind of Asian were you this week?
I was a Star Wars Asian.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. So hold on here. Finish your, so you were like, was there a specific thing you did?
Oh, you know, so I've been reading, so I don't read for fun anymore.
Right.
Like
right.
I don't read for fun at all. I haven't read for fun in over a decade.
Oh my God.
Most of the reading is work-related reading, right? So the last thing I want to do is pick up a book and read it for fun most of the time. But I've been reading all these Star Wars books this week. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
which books?
The Thrawn books.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't read those books.
Yeah. Heir to the Empire. The one I'm reading right now is Heir to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of getting ready for this show that's going to come out in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like a big Star Wars nerd.
Have you always been that? Like, did I not know that?
Yeah. Yeah. Always as a kid. Yeah. To the point where, you know, you get made fun of when you're in elementary school about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now it's like cool to, you know.
Right.
I was invited to give like they call it a plenary, which is sort of like a keynote ish.
Oh.
At the Asian American Studies Conference.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and this was earlier this year, and everyone's like really serious about it, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I'm generally a serious person, but I like to have fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I can tell from the shorts you like to have fun.
Thanks. My presentation though. All Star Wars themed.
Okay,
it was
go.
It was
drop a little bit for us.
Well,
drop a little sample.
No, I mean, it was about, the presentation was about, the talk was about how do we integrate Asian American Pacific Islander studies in K-12 curriculum throughout the country, right?
Whoa,
so
okay.
I worked on this initiative when I was a professor in Colorado to get it implemented, or to get it essentially signed into law statewide, right? So they wanted me to talk about that process, what we did and how we achieved that policy outcome. But I thought, I'm going to make this fun. So each one of my slides was just a different Star Wars picture.
Okay.
That was related to what the sort of what I was talking about, right? As I was telling the story of us implementing this policy. And some funny things happened. One is this really well-respected, renowned Asian American studies professor, this total OG, came up to me afterwards and said, great job. This stuff is usually so stuffy. This was fun. Also, my students are really nervous about their presentations. And I was like, see, look at that guy. That guy just did it, did a whole Star Wars presentation. So just go and have fun. So I helped calm the nerves of some other grad students. And then this other person came up to me and said, that was really fun. I love Star Wars. My mom works at Skywalker Ranch.
Oh, shit.
Next time, if you're ever in the Bay Area, let me know. We'll give you a tour.
Whoa.
It's like, I cannot wait to do a tour of Skywalker Ranch.
Wow.
Have you ever been there?
No. I mean, Star Wars.
You want to go? You want to be my plus one?
Yeah, I'll go with you. I know someone from Pixar, too. So we can do a little, like, entertainment tour of the Bay Area.
That'd be really cool.
Have you ever tried to, like, do a little deep reading of Star Wars to see if it's an Asian American story at all?
You know what's funny that you say that? I haven't, but the first Asian American or Asian in Star Wars is in The Return of the Jedi.
Oh, what?
Yeah, there's two people.
Is it that co-pilot?
It's one of the pilots.
Okay.
I think he says, like, there's too many of them.
I think I know who you're talking about. Yes!
His name is Lieutenant Elsage, or Telsage.
Okay.
NPR did a whole story about him.
The character or the actor?
Both.
That's awesome.
Because he's not credited, and they're trying to figure out who he is. He's not credited. And then there's another woman.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think he was an A-wing pilot, and I think he crashes into one of the things.
I think
it's like a destroyer.
That's right. I think he's an A-wing pilot. Yeah, but the article was saying, but he was wearing like a Y-wing pilot helmet. So it's just all this sort of discrepancy back then. But yeah, he's the first one. In fact, there's a picture of him framed in my office.
No shit.
Yeah.
Have you met that actor?
No, I think he passed away a long time ago, but I just have a picture of him because he's one of the first. There's another person who was in the scene before him in Jabba's Palace, but she plays a different species. I can't remember the name.
Oh, I see, species. I see.
So,
I see.
Like, technically, she's not
she's
Asian, I guess.
Asian.
Yeah.
Because you know who I'm talking about. You know so Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
He flies the Millennium Falcon during the final assault.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has a co-pilot who's like an alien.
Yeah.
But that dude looks Chinese as shit, man.
Oh, no. Knee Nublem or something like that?
Yeah. He's like, I think the actual voice actor is speaking an actual language. I don't know which one it is, but in order for it to make it sound. But I think he is speaking an actual language, not an Asian language. But I don't know. Just look at him. Look at that guy. Look, he's like, you know... He's the Star Wars Uber driver. He's like, where are you going? Where you go? Galactic Core or whatever. And that's awesome. That's him. He's Asian as shit.
You know, I think there's some problematic stuff too about it, which is I think like the Ewoks are based off supposed to be Filipinos.
Oh, what? Really?
Like apparently the language. I could be completely wrong here. So I hope I'm not spreading myth. But,
no, that's funny.
But like that's supposed to be part of it too. So
I mean, there's definitely so much racialization in Star Wars. I mean, so then in the prequels, like the Trade Federation guys.
That's right.
Those guys, like there's something Asian-y about them.
Yeah, they have like a Fu Man, like,
yes!
You know?
Yeah, they're like, oh, no. Oh, we need to change the credit. Like, you're definitely channeling, like, upset Chinese restaurant manager. You know, like them. Right?
But what the sort of interesting thing is that sort of, we're seeing, it's almost like if you look at it, you know, you study it as a race person, a race scholar, you see it sort of change over time to now where we're going to have... some new, you know, it's essentially we see progress, right?
Sure.
Particularly with our communities, where we're going to see a bunch of Jedi that are Asian.
That's awesome.
In this new coming show coming out next year or something like that.
Is
like,
it? This is the based on the Thrawn.
No, like thing. Another show.
Oh, afterwards. Another one.
Yeah, where it's the guy from Squid Game's going to be in it. He's going to be a Jedi Master. And then that other actor who's in The Good Place, I think.
Okay.
Mandy.
Yeah. I don't know.
I forget.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about.
He's like Filipino.
Yes, the Filipino dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. He's going to play a Jedi too, I think, or something like
That's awesome.
There's rumors that Keanu Reeves is going to be in it.
I mean,
playing like a Dark Sith Lord. That's rumors. I don't know.
Wow.
I'm spreading.
You're spreading rumors,
I should
bro.
Not be spreading all the Star Wars rumors.
I didn't realize
that. But George Lucas, if you listen to this, please, I want to be your friend.
I mean, like, the whole thing about the Jedi is very, like, Asian-based.
Totally. You know, it's based off samurai moves. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the first Star Wars is based off of Hidden Fortress, Kurosawa movie.
That's right.
It's about time.
Big inspiration,
Man, I'm going to look up this A-Wing pilot now.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing him as a kid, and I wasn't, like, you know, sort of, like, really aware of representation at the time, but I thought it was cool. And then I was like, hey, died. Nice.
Yeah.
Respect.
For the rebellion.
For the rebellion.
Yeah.
And in like a badass way.
You very.
Know? He's like, ah!
I mean, what a hero.
If you were a starfighter pilot, how would you want to go out? Would you want to go out being shot by a TIE fighter? Would you want to go out by ramming the bridge of a Star Destroyer?
Ooh.
What are we thinking? Or like... You get engulfed in the blast of an exploding star,
like in Rogue One, like those pilots who just got lit up
the
Death Star.
That's
probably it.
That one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
You know.
That's pretty good.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be flying a B wing though. That's for sure.
Why you like the B wing?
It's so weird.
It's super weird. So weird. Why would you fly that? Nobody wants to fly the B wing.
It's so weird. It's so cool looking. You know. It also isn't in the shape of a B.
It's like a T-wing.
Yeah.
Why don't they call it a T-wing?
Exactly.
They dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah. But it's really cool.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, I hope people are learning a little bit here. Now we do want to get into the kind of education part. We're going to be talking about Star Wars, which I think is very interesting. But you had this really interesting... Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, I don't know how even to set it up because I'm so, like, I'm almost over this topic, but race-conscious admissions
Sure.
got sort of struck down and by the Supreme Court, that there was a decision, and I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I think a lot of times Asian Americans, and I tried to talk about this, you know, when we were talking about that decision a couple of weeks ago, you know, Asian Americans, like, they're like, oh, well, you know, affirmative action doesn't help us. Why would we want to do that? We should all be, you know, race blind, whatever. We, you know, with our own community, right?
Sure.
So it always gets that kind of complicated, right? And I'm always trying to do stuff. But I feel you actually have good reasons and evidence and that kind of thing. Things I don't have. I would love for you to just kind of walk us through it a little bit. How are we supposed to, like, think about it? You do that. I'll try to make jokes along the way, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have some fun with it, right? We'll be like in my class when we talk about this,
oh,
right?
Okay.
So this is one area that I do research in, that I do study, that we talk about in my classes. And so affirmative action, right, is a really, it's a really old concept, a centuries old English legal concept based on equity.
Okay.
Right. Equity. That's an important topic and term, right? Where the way that it's been historically used in the United States is sort of connected to the civil rights era and about all the social injustice and racial injustice in the United States during that time, and where the federal government decided that they must affirmatively take some action to address this racial inequality through programs and policies that promote racial equity, right? And so it's not just in college admissions. It was in contracting. It was in all sorts of different things, right? Employment. But the way we sort of think about it today, when anybody ever throws out the word affirmative action, they're thinking about college admissions, right?
Yeah,
That's sort of in the zeitgeist, yeah. Right? But we try to be really specific in our terms. So we say race conscious admissions because affirmative action is a broad term that can be used for any type of addressing any type of inequality. So one could argue that affirmative action exists for athletes in college admissions, right? Where if you fulfill a certain type of position in for a sports team, then you get a plus up in your application and you get into that whatever school, or in band, right? Or in if your parents are big donors. If your parents went to that school, legacy admissions, right? So those are all different types of affirmative action policies, right?
Oh, shit.
Right? But in this case here, what we're talking about with respect to the court decision that happened a few months ago, that was about using race in a broader, holistic way in college admissions, where the court struck down the use of race in college admissions, except actually in our military academies. So West Point Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, as of right now, they can still use in a practice race-based affirmative action.
Okay.
Right? So, what was the question?
So the question, is like, you know, I think a lot of, you know, there's a lot of discussion in the Asian community, mm-hmm. whatever, how you want to define that, yeah. where it's like, is this quote unquote good or bad for you?
Yeah.
I was always sort of the mind that it's like, it you know, to use a Star Wars thing, yeah. only a Sith thinks in absolutes. Is it good or bad like that, right? It's far more complicated, but sure. I would love to have someone,
yeah.
and It's one of those topics now that as soon as you start saying it, people like go get entrenched and
yeah.
they start, you know, I don't know, like it's not really a conversation based on like knowing things. It's just I feel this way and now I'm mad and I'm on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to get past that.
Yeah. So a couple things, especially about Asian Americans, right? Which is all of these different polls out there are in some cases are showing Asian Americans are against it. Others are showing Asian Americans are for it, right? And so I think that's a good place to start.
Oh.
Is our community for it or is our community against it?
Yeah.
I think the reason why we see such different opinions about it, polling opinions or from news reports is because actually most folks doing that type of polling are asking questions very differently about affirmative action.
Oh.
And so methodologically speaking, right, they're asking it differently, in some cases providing context, in other cases not providing context,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, and then also before this court case ruling, it's a patchwork of how affirmative action was being implemented. So it was different in California versus in Texas versus in Washington versus in Michigan, you know, all these sort of states. And I'm naming states that actually have bans in place. Because it's so different state to state, region to region, and also with respect to how the question is being asked in polls and the context that's provided or not provided, people give wildly different answers.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think one of the better folks who actually did a good job of asking the question, asking it in context, as well as asking it in specific Asian languages.
Oh,
right?
Shit.
As well as English. These are our good friends at AAPI Data.
Big shouts, yeah, AAPI Data.
Yeah. Their professors, Janelle Wong is a professor at Maryland. Karthik Ramakrishnan is a professor at UC Riverside. So they run this and they did it, and I think in a much more comprehensive way. And their results were that the majority of Asian Americans are in support of race-conscious affirmative actions, particularly as it can uplift Black Americans, other communities of color, other minoritized identities.
Oh, shit.
Right? So I think that's one thing. You know, as a social scientist, we often look at how do we accurately measure any phenomenon out there, right? That's like 90% of our job is to figure out how do we get the best, most accurate answer, be it quantitative or qualitative research. And so we're always scrutinizing each other's methods.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's probably the best one approach to do it, and it's those results I think are surprising compared to how we've been publicly portrayed in the news media.
Because
oftentimes you read all the news articles, they, you know, it always frames it as if Asian Americans are all against affirmative action.
Yeah, I mean, like, the news always trots out some Uncle Wong type dude who's like, I'm against my daughter should be able to go to Harvard, and you know this guy. You know, like, the one guy at the family reunion where you're like,
sure,
shut the fuck up, dude. You know, like, and they, I think the whoever, like, will trot out this person and then make a whole big thing of it, and then be like, ooh. You know, then all of a sudden we get the model minority
following up right after that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why so much popular media is positioning Asian Americans in that light, and not to say there aren't Asian Americans who are against affirmative action. There are.
Oh yeah,
right?
Just for sure.
Just like there are other communities of color that are also against it. Right. I mean, we're complex. We're diverse. We're not all a monolith. Right. But because of this larger narrative about the model minority myth, about how we are viewed and positioned in sort of American society, with particular attention to education, that becomes a very convenient story.
Mm.
And so when you find someone who does have that viewpoint, that's what the reporting tends to frame it as, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in this case, remember, this lawsuit was actually not, was being led by a guy named Ed Bloom, who's not Asian American. And has been
Ed Bloom. That's like the least Asian name I've ever heard.
And so for him, he actually was behind the previous affirmative action case in Texas, Abigail Fisher.
Right.
Yeah, right. And then after losing that case, he was like, there's actually really funny videos and recordings of him like going out to Asian communities, basically saying, I need to find good Asians who I can use in this lawsuit.
Right?
So he like went out actively recruiting Asian Americans for this lawsuit, right? So I think that's one thing. It's the way we're sort of viewed in the media, and it's through this model minority lens. And the other argument that we hear folks use, right, particularly for Asian Americans, is, oh man, they have perfect SAT scores, they have perfect GPAs. Why are they being denied admission to these schools? Well, part of it is if you want to go to a school like Harvard or Yale, a perfect GPA and a perfect SAT score is the bare minimum.
Right.
Right. Like that's everybody who's applying, who's going to be considered, is going to have a perfect SAT score and a perfect GPA.
Yeah.
That's one. You don't automatically get to go there just because those two things are good. Everybody's who's going there, those two things, those two metrics are good.
Right.
So that's one. Two is that relies on this assumption that GPA and SAT scores are good measures of meritocracy.
Ah, yes.
Right. Is that because you know that you're better prepared or better positioned to go to these schools because your SAT score is higher, when we know that SAT score is much stronger predictor of your parents' income level, your parents' educational status. Basically, it has less to do. It is not the perfect measure that people think it is, right?
Yep. I had a great SAT score. I'm a dumbass. I'm serious. I had a great SAT score.
I had a horrible SAT score.
And you're a fucking now look at Dr. Nguyen. I have to call you Dr. Nguyen.
So it is not a perfect measure. So those are sort of the things that we often sort of promote. We meaning society often promotes rather than thinking more critically about these something like the SAT or the GPA
I think the argument is always like, oh, well, the quote unquote best person should go into whatever, Harvard or Yale my whole thing was like, why are we always talking about Harvard and Yale?
That's
like
right.
They have terrible sweatshirts. So like, let's just go to these, Cal State San Luis Obispo. So like, I think, how do you respond to like that? I guess like people saying, well, the people who are getting from affirmative action, they're not as good, quote unquote, not as good, and they're taking a spot from someone who is quote unquote a better student.
That's a really great point, right? So, to what you were saying earlier, we spend way too much time talking about Harvard and Yale, right? Like, they account for such a small percentage of most students in higher education. Nearly half of all Asian American Pacific Islander students are going to a community college.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
right? Save that money, baby.
Right. Everyone just assumes they're at these certain types of schools, rather than open access colleges that are throughout our country. Right. And so again, that we should spend more time, quite frankly, talking about these schools that are. Our communities are actually going to.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one big thing. The other thing about sort of taking a spot away, this is sort of the big difference between, the big contention between folks who are pro and against affirmative action, right?
Sure.
The folks who are against it often say it's a zero-sum game. If you take one spot, then there isn't another spot. Progressives say that it is not a zero-sum game, that universities they can build and create a class that makes sense for them, right? But again, the schools that we're talking about here, we can count them like on all of our fingers and toes. And
My fingers, my toes,
your fingers, your toes. That's about all the schools that are like going to be mostly impacted by this court case, right? It's not the overwhelming majority of all colleges and universities in the United States.
That's great.
Yeah.
I wanted to also get into, you have all these slides here, okay, that you have about, I don't even know, you have all these things.
Yeah.
Like, what are some, I feel like, we had this nice talk, you and I, back and forth with, you had this really interesting thing you did where you were looking at the admission essays, like the essays that undergrads wrote. And you were analyzing them, right? Yeah. And I felt like you had like some really interesting like findings from that. What was the study?
So I'm actually like last author on this study. There's some really brilliant folks who are working on it. Julie Park from Maryland, is the lead on that. And essentially, right? So that one of the big arguments that the folks who sued Harvard, this is SFFA, Ed Bloom's group. Mm-hmm. Sued Harvard, basically saying that Asian Americans were getting lower scores on one of the criteria, which is what they call a personal rating.
Right.
Right, which they keep saying is which they have said in court. They call it a personality rating.
Right,
really problematic.
Right.
It's not that.
I think somebody was like trying to say that like, oh, they think that Asians don't have personality.
That's right. And sometimes the media doesn't catch on and they say personality rating, right? So they're
words matter. That's why like earlier when I said radicalized and really it said racialized.
That's right.
They're very different. Personal and then personality, those are different things.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, so we know that they, they hired really smart, expensive lawyers. And so the assumption is then that they were intentional in using that, it's saying personality instead of personal, right? Like,
oh,
that's not a mistake.
Yeah.
A top lawyer
sure.
who's billing tons of money is going to
yeah.
make, right?
Yeah.
And so we can assume that's intentional, right? Because they're trying to build a narrative about them saying Asian Americans are all bland and don't have personalities, right? Okay, but it's really a personal rating that's based off a lot of different indicators, one of which are letters of recommendation, right? Mm-hmm. And so what our research is looking at and other people's research, the broader research community, and the reason why I'm talking about all this is we wrote an amicus brief for these court cases where we essentially examined all the research in these areas and presented it to the court. And so what a lot of the research says, and some of it, not my own, but what the broader research community has found, right, is that Asian American students, you know, they're more likely to go to public schools, high schools, that is, than private schools, right?
Sure.
And so when you go to a public school and you want to apply to one of these highly selective institutions, you need letters of recommendation. But at public schools, teachers, counselors, anybody who's going to write those letters for you are way more under-resourced, right?
Yeah.
And so versus say if you went to a private boarding high school.
Right. And then you get the headmaster from Hogwarts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you got Dumbledore writing your letter for you.
Not only that, but Dumbledore's got way less students.
Than a
public school teacher here in say, New York City.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that means that they don't have as much time and attention that they can write a letter that is going to play such a big role in upping that score.
Yeah.
Right. So SFFA is saying, well, the score is low. That's racism, right? That's how they're being discriminated against. What our research is showing is that it's way more complicated than that. It's the type of schools Asian American students are going to, it's the type of resources those schools have. And that's why we're seeing such differences in the quality of those letters of recommendation.
Yo.
And no shade to the teachers, no shade to the counselors.
No, they are overworked and
underpaid, right?
You only got so much time. You got to write 50 letters of rec or some shit like that.
That's it. So they're going to maybe use a lot of the same copy-paste, right? So, and again, no shade. This is just the reality of when you are overworked and underpaid. And so that's sort of what is actually happening when we actually go and grab all this data. And this is data from like hundreds of thousands of college application records, right? So it's not that we're just pulling some random stuff.
Like reading a couple.
Yeah, is that we had access to all of this data. The research team really, again, I'm like last author on, I'm barely playing a role in this. But it's all this data that exists that we can actually run and test, right? Rather than just sort of making a claim out of
about
a lower score, and that means that there's some sort of discrimination happening, right? Our job is instead to say, well, if the score is lower, why is it lower? Let's actually investigate and see if it is discrimination. If it isn't, that's important. I'll be the first to stand up and argue that. Or is it something more structural and social that's impacting that? And that is a problem in itself also, right? So I think worthy of bringing that nuance out rather than simply saying...
They're racist or something.
They're racist. Now, another sort of broader data point that people often say, right, is say Harvard is discriminating against Asian Americans. Why did they admit nearly 30%?
Right, yeah.
like
we hate Asians. Yeah. That's why they're only most of the students.
Yeah, like nearly one third of the students when they only make up 6% of the whole population in the country, right? It did go up about 2-3% from last year to this year. So like last year it was like above 25%.
Oh my God.
A quarter, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's so many.
I just don't know if I buy that argument based off broad data like that. And then our nuanced empirical research shows, you know, it's much more complex.
Fucking man, fucking research, guys. Fucking ruining all of our jokes and all of the nonsense.
Hopefully you can take the research and make jokes out of it, right? I mean, you can read this amicus brief
I'll read this amicus brief and I'm going to pull out some stuff. I mean, I think there's some pretty banger stuff I can do with
with
Hogwarts right now.
If
you think about it, Hogwarts, that's like... For sure, you go to Hogwarts, you have a pretty good shot of going to an Ivy. I felt that the professor to wizard ratio was like pretty good.
The
classes never seemed that full. It's a private school.
It's definitely private
very
school.
Very much a legacy place.
all about like, all you know, I don't know very much about Harry Potter.
Very racist, actually, if you think about it. You have to be a wizard to go.
Well, so, and then also, is it problematic to sort of put a hat on you and then say you belong to this
to
this house or this group, right? That's
what if the hat is like, it just puts all the Asian people together? That's, oh, you're all House of the Dragon. Yeah,
wow, that's actually kind of cool.
We're all like, yeah. And then we're we always have the rice cooker going.
That's right.
Oh my God.
But the sorting hat, that is a bit be problematic.
It can be.
So
the sorting hats.
I have really good friends and colleagues who actually do research sort of connected to that, and like that is actually what there's a field of scholars called psychometricians. Like that's essentially sort of what the sorting hat is, like a crude instrument of what a psychometrician would use.
Whoa,
right?
Yeah.
And so psychometricians, a lot of them, if they want to go make money, is like they go actually work for SAT and ACT,
oh,
right? Because their job is to design a test that can better measure what they're trying to measure, right?
Oh.
They're trying to constantly improve on that. So the sorting hat is basically like a crude psychometrician trying to figure out where you belong.
Crude SAT class. The thing, test score. It's like the ACT, but like a leathery hat. Okay, well, one last thing I wanted to do, and this is almost kind of like a basic question, but we were talking before we started, you know, this is Asian Not Asian, the podcast with all of your favorite Asian friends. And there's a term that gets used, this is, you know, sort of, especially around May, Asian American Pacific Islander,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Native, and then also I think it's Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's a lot of people, that's a lot of places, and I was trying to think about, like, I had a joke about this before, about like why we all grouped together, and it was something around the fact that like sometimes I feel that we were all grouped together based on the, you know, like one white woman's really great vacation once. She's like, oh, like the Thai people and the Tahitians, they're great. They have amazing beaches, and we're all together in 1 month.
We do have good beaches.
We do.
Yeah.
And so I was like, is that why we're all together? And you have, again, actual, you know, knowledge. So I wanted to understand, you know, your what the sort of the perspective of like, why are we all like clumped all together? You know, is it, you know, even though we're like, you take me, you take a Samoan. Sure, we may have fire tattoos, but that's pretty much the limit of our
of your common experience.
Commonalities, yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna send you something that I wrote a few years ago that actually sort of teases all this out, right?
Oh.
So a couple different things are happening. One, which is there are sort of one instance where we collectively decided to come together, right? Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders decided to come together because in some cases, we did have some similar experiences. Militarization of our homelands, or colonization of our homelands, as
which
well.
Which is a kind of vacation, you know? There's a bunch of white people on a boat, they land on your shit, and they're like, yo, we're gonna hang out here for a while.
Right, so, Filipino Americans could say that's sort of their experience,
yes,
right? Same thing in the Pacific Islands, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We could argue with the French in Vietnam, right?
Yep.
So not argue that. I mean, that's documented
happened.
History.
Yeah, yeah, that's for sure.
So we have some similar common experiences there that impact why and how we came to the United States.
Sure.
Right. So we share some common experiences.
Word.
And so that brings us together, and so we want to advocate for some similar policies. On the other hand, right, other people are racist, and so they so they racialize us as all the same,
because
they can't tell the difference between you or a Samoan person, right? And so they racialize you as the same.
Yeah.
So two things are happening at one given time, right? We our communities are collectively coming together to say that we have some common experiences. And we want to work and advocate collectively in a pan-racial, pan-ethnic way to uplift our communities. On the other hand, we're being racialized in negative ways, in similar ways, and so that effect is happening.
Word.
Right. So, but then at the same time, right, another complex thing is that we are also all so different.
Yeah.
And we want to celebrate the differences amongst our ethnicities. We want to celebrate the beauty of that, and so we want to be able to disaggregate who we are,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, sort of what I argue is that You don't have to be, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both at the same time. We can come together in pan-racial, pan-ethnic ways, and we can also talk about the diversity and complexity and beauty of our communities at the same time. We can live, both coexist currently, and they should, and everyone should get over it, right? Unfortunately, they don't. Even in the Supreme Court case, Justice Gorsuch wrote at length about all of this, actually, about the categorization of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and how he basically, and he's saying, it doesn't make sense, it keeps changing, and because of all that, we shouldn't have essentially racial categories, right? Justice Alito wrote the same thing in the Fisher 2 dissent. And so...
They said that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're like, these kids keep changing the thing, and like, we don't know what to do.
Well, he basically wrote, like, in the Fisher 2 dissent, right, he wrote... you know, you have Cambodian students, you've got Cambodian American students, you have, you know, whatever other East Asian category or South Asian category, they're all so different.
Yeah.
And so that just shows you that an Asian American racial category doesn't make any sense and shouldn't exist. Therefore, we should not have any racial categories, period.
Wow.
We should just get rid of race, stop talking about race.
Mm.
And so our argument is, well, what you're forgetting is that we still get racialized in the same way.
Yeah.
When people terrorize our communities, they usually don't know who we are or don't understand who we are, and they just see a face that they think represents some Asian American community, and they, you know, and that's at the most extreme example, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
So, that's what they're dismissing. So, but the sort of federal policy is at one point, the federal government categorized Asian Americans, at the time they called it just Asian Pacific Islander, into one broad category.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until the Pacific Islander community really advocating for the fact they were being invisibilized in being sort of absorbed in this broader Asian category. Because if we go out and we keep saying Asian American Pacific Islander, but we forget we don't include any Pacific Islanders in what we're doing, then we're invisibilizing that community.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were like, we want to be intentional in advocating for ourselves as our own separate racial category. And they did. And so after OMB Directive 15 was revised, it became two separate categories. And that's why if you like look up the census, they'll report Asian Americans and they'll report Pacific Islanders as two separate categories.
Oh.
Now, I just noticed earlier that you said Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander, right? That's actually a pretty recent phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? People have... Even though the racial category is Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander, that's what OMB Directive 15 says. That's what the census says.
Oh.
Up until 3 years ago, we kept on saying it was more common for us to say AAPI.
Yes.
But now we're saying AA and NHPI.
Yes.
Right? And I don't know the origins of how that happened, but it happened about 3 years ago. And what I did notice was the Biden administration started saying AA and NHPI, and then everyone else followed suit really fast, including me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At least that's...
It makes sense.
At least that's why I changed,
that's
right?
Why I started.
So yeah, so you can see that all this is connected to public policy, right? Is that these racial categories sort of are created, are dissolved, they're very slippery because of the way we are racialized, the way we're socialized, the way our society shifts, changes, and evolves, and the way for us to better capture our lived experiences, right? This is all stuff that folks can read in a fantastic book called Racial Formation in the United States, written by our professor from Berkeley, Michael Omi, and his colleague, Howard Winant. So did you ever take class with Michael Omi?
No.
Man, he's great. He just retired.
Oh, shit.
And he's... the best.
Wow.
Yeah. Can I shout out to Michael Omi?
Shout out. Big shouts to that guy. I love that we were also talking this whole time. We're at over an hour now. And, you know, we've been talking about all these, you know, public policy things and how it's affecting, you know, how we sort of see these racialized groups. And the whole time, just banger hip hop, just in the background the entire time, you know? I think it, like, really elevates our conversation.
Well, it's 50 years of hip hop, right?
Yo, it is.
We've been celebrating it in New York in all the different boroughs. It's been amazing.
I love it. I want to say thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. It's a real honor.
I feel I've learned some shit. You probably can't say the same, but I am glad that I learned something. There was some osmosis coming from this side, from one mic to another.
Yeah.
You know?
As a educator, nothing brings me more joy is when someone tells me that they learned something from a conversation that we had.
That's so crazy, bro.
It, that's what I live for.
Well, you were telling me too that this podcast might help you on your way to getting tenure. So I'm hoping that I'm hoping that's true,
and not the other way around, where they listen to it and they're like, let's not give them tenure.
It wouldn't be the first time.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time.
I've blocked tenure left and right. Well, thank you again for coming on. Where can our fans read about your work or read your work or find more about you?
Oh, gosh. If they go to, you know, we all have faculty profiles on our university webpage. If you find me on NYU's webpage, there's a link there that has all of my research. Feel free to read it. Hopefully it helps you in your daily lives or in anything that you're trying to do. My goal is to, much of my research is to partner with community. And so so hopefully I can keep working with our communities here in New York and in the country to uplift Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander communities.
Yo, that is exactly my same goal, but with ha-has, okay? It's the same thing.
It is the same thing. In fact, you are able to share all of this way more than someone like me. So you play a much bigger role in really the you and your peers much more than, say, me, because no one reads what I write, but people listen and watch and learn from you. And so I think, you know, you have incredible responsibility as well as a whole lot of fun to do this.
Okay.
So,
well, if you want to, you know, check out more of this responsibility that I have, you can go to Asian, and follow us on Instagram, Asian Not Asian Pod. You can follow me there. Nice Pants Bro. Again, come check out our show. Our next one is September 8th. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, again, we were talking about Native, Hawaiians. And so please check out the links that we've got in the episode description and support the community where you can. And until then, folks, you know, fucking read a book. God damn it. Try. Maybe read either. What was the book that you recommended?
Racial Formation in the United States.
Or the Star Wars Thrawn arc. One of those two. Read one of those two.
Both are good. Both are good.
Both are good.
And both talk about race.
Both talk about race. All right. We love you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Why?
If you have T-Mobile 5G home internet, you might be hearing this a lot.
Why?
Every time your internet slows down during the busiest hours.
Why?
Because your network gives priority to cell phone users.
Why?
Good question. Why not switch to Cox internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours?
Okay.
Stop the whys and visit cox.com/5G home for details. T-Mobile prioritizes certain T-Mobile phone users over home internet users during times of congestion.